Hello and welcome to the Tour de France podcast with humansandevent.com. Today we're again on the Mega Smeralda, today docked 20 kilometres up the coast from Calvi, where a stunning and spectacular stage finished. My name is Richard Moore, and for this final podcast from Corsica, I'm joined by the ubiquitous Daniel Freeb. And after the huge success of our Italian friend Ciro's appearance on last night's pod, we've got another international guest today, Julien Preteau, a French journalist with Reuters. Bienvenue, Julien. Welcome.
Thank you.
Julien, I'm actually French.
Exactly the same with you.
So really?
I'm French, French only.
Daniel's not French. He just thinks he is.
Richard is definitely not French.
I'm not French.
His pronunciation of Duranier.
So, Julien, you're born and bred in France.
Yes.
But you speak impeccable English.
I wish.
Can you maybe speak slightly more accented English?
So yeah.
Because that was one of the hits of Ciro last night.
You want a French accent?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, there's no problem. I can do that.
If you can ham it up a bit, that would be great. Thank you. Today, chaps, well, let's talk first about today's stage, final stage on Corsica. And I'd be interested as well to hear Julien's thoughts on the tour's visit to Corsica. But Daniel, what I heard, and there was a bit of disagreement between you two about whether today had been an exciting stage or not. Won in the end by Simon Gerrans.
I mean, we're grateful for small mercies these days, aren't we? For fairly meagre action, you know, especially after 3 days. And we're not used to seeing anything really happen on a sort of... Well, not that there were any great splits on GC, but there were some splits. There were people losing time. It was difficult. It was always the risk that...
It was stunning, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was always the risk that a team would go to the front and really drill it and cause some serious damage. I think that could have happened, but on the other hand, I think there were a lot of teams quite happy for Radio Shack to be controlling it.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people said that somebody will lose the tour in Corsica, one of the overall contenders will be out, and that's not happened. Julien, what's been your impression today and of the first 3 days in Corsica?
Well, very nice for 3 days. I mean, the first 2 days were quite spectacular in terms of action. I mean, the first day especially, for bad reasons, though. Well, there's one, you know, overall contender who fell behind, so it's Thomas de Gendt.
I mean, Thomas de Gendt, I think he's ill.
As for today's stage, I mean, it was basically neutralized until the last climb, which is probably modern cycling. Anyway.
Modern cycling. Oh, what's been your impression of Corsica? Have you enjoyed the Corsican sojourn?
Yeah, well, I've been here on holidays many times already. So it's no surprise here.
Where are you from? Are you from Paris?
Oh, no, I'm from northern France. I was born next to Lens. Mm-hmm. You know football.
Yeah, Eric Black. It was a big deal for the tour to come to Corsica for the 100th edition. Do you feel it's been a success? Do you feel that the Corsicans have enjoyed having the tour here?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they were rather indifferent at first, and that's probably the feeling we all got from Porto Vecchio before the start.
Mm.
But it wasn't not just that there are not many people there, and that's the impression that I've got. It's not a lack of enthusiasm, it's just there simply are not many people in Corsica.
Yeah, not many people living there, and it's still early for the holidays. I mean, had the tour started a week later, there have been a lot of people on holidays there, so probably much better. But
and not many people seem to have come here for the tour. We've talked about this last couple of days.
It's quite expensive to go on holidays, of course.
I spoke to a few today, and they were, they talked about their pride at holding the tour and how it had taken too long to come, only positive things from the Corsicans themselves. I think the opinion has been quite diverse. I think the journalists always grumble the most, and we have grumbled because I think we've probably had the most sort of challenging time here with all the logistical difficulties of getting to press rooms on boats, etc., etc. Teams, I think, have had it quite easy, really. Mm. I think they've been very pleased with the way things have been organised. You know, they've been able to get to the finish. Their hotels fairly quickly most nights.
Mm. When will the tour be back to Corsica, do you think?
200.
I'd guess earlier. I didn't see any huge problems.
But it would have to be, there'd have to be a grand départ here. It couldn't really travel here and then back in, could it? In the middle of the tour? Would it do
between,
that?
Between Pyrenees and the Alps, why not? One stage, maybe.
Mm. Yeah, well, that'd be interesting. I mean, it is a... If Corsica featured later on in the race, these stages, these roads could provide a real, really interesting racing, I think. I think just because it's come so early, people are just feeling their way around at the moment. But like I say, I am surprised that we are heading off Corsica without more damage having been done either to GC or to the favourites.
Yeah, a fair amount of damage has been done, like you say, not to the favourites, but you know, there's been a lot. There's been a fair few crashes, some fairly significant crashes.
Well, they're significant crashes in the sense that they will, I think, affect tomorrow's stage, yeah, team time trial, because there are certain teams that are quite severely weakened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thinking of Team Sky, Julia, you were talking about Geraint Thomas. You know, he's sort of struggling with a fractured bone in his pelvis or hip, and he had to be helped onto his bike today before he even set off the stage. He then spent a lot of stage as last man in the bunch and came in that group 9 minutes down. What are your thoughts about Geraint Thomas?
It's a very short time trial, 25 kilometres, so there's 9 men, so it's going to be a very small rotation, so I don't think it will, you know, hamper the chances that much.
Do you not think,
although it could have come down to maybe a couple of seconds.
Yeah.
It means from his point of view, I think he was talking tonight as though he doesn't expect to stay with the team, and then it'll be a case of trying to make the time limit. And being such a short stage, it will be a very unforgiving time limit. It'll be difficult.
Yeah, I mean, if they could have chosen one guy to lose for the team time trial, it certainly wouldn't have been him either.
Yeah.
I mean, he's one of their bigger engines, and also got a lot of experience riding in kind of group event, in team pursuit, etc. And they're usually the guys that go best, particularly on a short course like tomorrow.
Julian, you were saying that you thought Geraint Thomas should leave Sky. What's your reason for that?
I think he's been nerfed and been too much protected, maybe. And I mean, if he wants to win a classic, which he obviously can, I mean, he has what it takes, definitely. He's actually one of my, you know, one of the riders I prefer in the peloton. Well, he's extremely cool, but he's so talented. I mean, you see him on a bike, he's fantastic. And If he wants to win, let's say Paris-Roubaix, for instance, he has to, you know, bite the dust a little bit more. And I don't think he's been doing that to Sky. I mean, training in those training camps earlier in the season, I don't think he's ridden enough, you know, in, you know, awful conditions.
Mm. What team would you see him in? Do you feel that he's in sort of too much of a comfort zone with Team Sky? Is that the issue?
Yes. I think that. I mean, he could come
back.
What
kind of rider can he become? You mentioned classics, but you know, he's comes from a pursuiting background as well. Does he have the potential to be a, you know, Bradley Wiggins or somebody like that physically?
Physically, yes, I think. But does he want to? I mean, that's another question.
I mean, there is that issue of, you know, comfort zones, various teams being comfort zones, and it really applies to almost every nationality. There is a team, you know, for instance, the Australians, it's...
We'll get on to French cycling maybe later on, Julian.
You know, it can seem like a comfort zone, you know, for the Australians, a bit greenish. I remember I had a conversation with Rolf Aldag recently, the former Team Mobile manager, and we were talking about German riders of a certain generation a few years ago and, you know, not having really lived up to their potential. And he said, well, with, you know, when you had Gerolsteiner and T-Mobile, there were too many German professionals. It was too easy to turn pro for Germans.
And Milram for a bit as well.
And Milram, exactly. And so I'm not sure. I mean, I think
what?
It's...
Milram. Remember them?
I think it's counterbalanced. I think often riders do perform better in teams where the environment is familiar. But, you know, I see what you're saying. I think the riders are paid pretty well at Team Sky. And it's certainly... It's the environment that he's been in throughout his career, isn't it? You know, wouldn't perhaps do him any harm to change and challenge himself for, you know, for 1-2 seasons.
Today's stage, won by Simon Gerrans, you mentioned Orica Greenedge there. That sort of eased some of the embarrassment, perhaps, of Saturday when their bus became stuck at the finish. And Gerrans said it was a stage that he targeted for 3 months, that he'd been looking at for 3 months. Now, it was a great and a surprising stage win. You didn't even think it was Simon Gerrans, did you?
Well, that was mainly wishful thinking, because in our predictions competition, I had Impey down the second place, so I'm just very excited about Impey and Sagan coming first and second.
You're very confidently yelling at the television.
I looked, yeah.
You know, as the commentator was declaring Gerrans the winner, there you were shouting, a lone voice in the press room, shouting, it wasn't Gerrans, it was Impey, it was Impey, it was Impey, and everybody
well,
looking at you in a bemused fashion while Twitter is alive with the Gerrans victory.
Well, look,
Daniel.
Look, Richard, I did not know that Simon Gerrans was that quick in a sprint. They could beat Peter Sagan.
No, not many people did.
Tan Man, our esteemed colleague Anthony Tan, promised to parade naked if Peter Sagan was beaten in that sprint.
Peter Sagan hasn't been the same since he grew a little goatee beard. It seems to have slowed him down.
Well, the only thing about Gerrans is he was really perfectly laid out. If you see the way they, you know, took the last bend, he probably had much more speed than Sagan at the
thanks to Impey. So perhaps Daniel should get some kind of bonus point for.
We'll raise that with the chairman tomorrow. I was interested in the press conference. Gerrans, I think he's on two or three occasions in the press conference, he talks about what a great season Greenedge had had last year, but hadn't. But you know, they were just missing a Tour de France stage win. But you know, I thought that was a little bit. Sort of window dressing their results. Yeah, window dressing their results. I mean, I think they've underachieved, to be honest, in their first 18 months in the.
Have they underachieved, or are they just a team, as we spoke about the other day, with good riders rather than.
Well, they won. I think they won 33 races last year, but, you know, for a team packed with good time trialists and good sprinters, I think that's maybe less impressive than it sounds.
Well, they could get another one tomorrow.
Yeah. The pressure's slightly off them now. I think. You know, they might just blossom now, I think, now that the pressure's off.
In the meantime, the stage today did shake things up a little bit. David Miller of Garmin Sharp slipped down to 7th overall, still just 1 second behind the leader. But I spoke to him this morning at the start in Ajaccio about his first couple of days, where he seemed to be in really good form, including his 4th place in Saturday's first stage, about his thoughts ahead of today's stage and his prospects for perhaps taking the yellow jersey and choose his team time trial. You're pleased at how you're going, because you're obviously going very well, or disappointment at that missed opportunity yesterday?
Mixed emotions, I think, would be the best description. I know from all my years that opportunities like that happen once in a blue moon.
Once every 13 years.
Once every 13 years, Richard, exactly. Not even, because the last time, you know, you either get it in a clear-cut situation where it's the best man, or I'll be perfectly frank, I mean, it has been a sporting merit, but it's been a lot of luck as well for me. So I've been blessed with good luck, and that was a bit of bad luck. So
how do you explain that 4th place on day one? You obviously were lucky to miss a crash. What were you doing, first of all, so far up, and at what point in the sprint did you think, I'm going to go for this?
I was actually feeling so good. I mean, when you feel good, it's easy to sit at the front, and that was the thing. I was just literally, it felt like I'd just been racing a few Ks, so I was just picking gaps. I was incredibly lucid and strong. I mean, for me to sprint, I've always been able to sprint, but normally I don't get in the way of sprinters, and I'm not good enough to match the pure sprinters. But when I'm fresh like that at the end of the race, I can do that.
You had to take one or two little risks. There were a little gap you came through on the final bend. I mean, you were a bit between your teeth at that point.
I just got carried away. I got excited. I love racing. I just got carried away, you know. I mean, it's I can't help myself. I promised the guys, I promised Christian in particular, because after the Giro where I was right at the sharp end as well on the first stage and got taken out in a crash, and it then ruined my whole race. I promised myself that I wouldn't do that here on the first stage, and yet I get in the race situation and I'm like a junior again. You know, sometimes emotion just takes over and
things. Was there any point in that finishing straight where you actually began to believe, think, I might have this?
Not really. It was just fun. It was more kind of like, I'm going to give the sprinters a go. You know, it was like, it was quite funny, you know. I was actually faster than a lot of the pure sprinters, and
Have you looked at the overhead?
No, I haven't seen it. But
you look faster than Van Poppel, for example.
I was coming up on everybody. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I could feel the sprint happen. I could feel how strong I was, and I was just seeing myself overtaking sprinters and catching the guys in front, and
Cavendish have a little word with you yesterday?
He's got a little tap on the back, yeah. I got a lot of kudos from everybody, actually, yesterday. Everyone was just like, wow, nice sprint. So that's always nice when your colleagues are...
And are you thinking, you know, team time trial tomorrow, last time there was a team time trial, Garmin Sharp won that. Are you thinking that, you know, if you can stay in contention today, there's a possibility there?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a possibility, but today is the number one objective. It's going to be a really hard day. We always knew today would be the hardest day in Corsica, and considering how hard yesterday was, that's a bit a daunting prospect for everyone. So let's get through today, and then we'll switch into TTT mode.
You're listening to the Tour de France podcast with humansinvent.com and Sharp.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. I'm sitting here in the bar of the Mega Smeralda with Julien Preteau and Daniel Freeb. Since we have you here, Julien, we're going to get on in the final segment to talk about tomorrow's team time trial. And we have an interview with Rolf Aldag of Omega Pharma Quickstep, who's going to tell us a little bit about their approach to that event. But Julien, for this section, we were going to quiz you a little bit about French cycling. And Pierre Roland, especially, that was one of the questions we were asked on Twitter, actually. We were asked somebody, a Niall Foster, what do you think of the polka dot ensemble supported by Pierre Roland? Slated on Twitter, but I quite like it, he says. Let's get to the really important issues first.
Yeah.
Pierre Roland, his polka dot outfit, the helmet, the top, the shorts, everything.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a throwback to Michael Rasmussen.
Yeah. Because of the chicken pox. It's really ugly.
Awful.
Someone mentioned it was chicken pox, actually.
What did you make of his move, Julien? It seemed to me that it was a massive miscalculation. They thought they were sprinting for the mountains points, and then they went about 3 kilometres too early. I think it was him and David Malacarne.
I have to say I'm good friends with Andy Fliquenger, his sports director, and I still don't know why they've done that. I mean, I appreciate what they did yesterday, you know, going front, and you had his own, didn't hurt, a few minutes of good effort, doesn't hurt. Just like Froome did yesterday, it was, okay. Today was a bit, I don't know.
He's racing quite aggressively, Roland. Is he riding for,
is
King of the Mountains?
He is riding for GC, he is riding.
No, but it's the King of the Mountains, so GC is his ambition, not King of the Mountains.
Yeah. So that's why, you are puzzled. I'm very pleased
to hear that King of the Mountains is not his ambition, because the sooner he gets out of that King of the Mountains jersey, the better.
Vöckler could get it.
Vöckler wore them last year, didn't he? He wore it. Julien, I spotted some Cofidis cars driving onto the ferry earlier. I didn't realise they were riding the tour.
I didn't realise they were still in business.
Europe Car have been a successful team the last couple of years, but what about the other French teams? What's going on with them?
They're not good. I mean, yeah. Well, FDJ are.
They're quite an aggressive team.
Yeah, they're mounting quite a challenge for Pinot this year. We've seen them, front of the bunch a few times already, which is a huge challenge from previous years.
Quite surprising yesterday, Julien, though, when they. I don't know whether that was a kind of admission of weakness, because they're so worried about Pino's descending that they had to get him to the front on what wasn't a difficult descent, or whether it was a statement of intent.
Yeah, the idea was, when we spoke to Maggio yesterday, the idea was to skim the peloton so that that for the finish they're only there are already some new riders eliminated far back and make it a safer finish. And it's not a bad move.
No, but it's quite pessimistic, isn't it? They are quite pessimistic about Pino's ability to handle sort of difficult descents,
finishes. I'm not sure it's about the descents. Just that, if you have a finish with 200 riders, it's causing problems. And if it's a finish with 80 riders, it's safer for themselves and for everyone.
How about Pino, though? I mean, what is he the real deal? What there must be a lot of excitement in France about him.
Yeah. He's for the first time in. Many years. The French in the field, they have a potential tour winner. At least top contender. He may never win the tour, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was in the top five this year.
So let's take a little break there, and we'll come back and talk about the team time trial.
This is the humansinvent.com Tour de France podcast, powered by Sharp.
We've moved from our residence in the bar. We're now in the restaurant in the Mega Smeralda. So let's talk finally, chaps, about the team time trial tomorrow back in Nice on the mainland. Nice kind of flat stage, 25 kilometres, a long stretch along the Promenade des Anglais. Daniel, what are you thinking? Who do you fancy for the team time trial?
I think in spite of Tony Martin's injury, I would say that Omega Pharma Quickstep are among the favourites, if not the favourite. He's quite optimistic, Tony Martin, that he'll be fine by the first rest day, back to full fitness. Even today, I think you said, Rich, you finished in the front group.
He's in the front group today.
Yeah, and apparently when he holds the tri-bars, his injured elbow is not really affected by his position on the bike. He's not touching the armrest with the wound, so he's actually okay. So I think.
And they have a fast team, and Mark Cavendish is somebody you sometimes overlook, but he is a fantastic team time trial.
Yeah, I think fantastic physically in the team time trial because of the speed he's got. That's something that he always talks about, how you need speed in team time trials, and actually sprinters can be very valuable riders in team time trials, but also as a motivator. You know, I think we've all heard stories about.
I heard a story today.
You did, but that's
is that embargoed?
That's classified for the moment. Oh. Rich, yeah.
Damn. Well, you spoke to Rolf Aldag, the technical director, I think his title is it? Omega Pharma Quickstep.
Yes.
Rolf Aldag, who was his old director, of course, at HCC Columbia, and he told you a little bit about Tony Martin and about their approach to the team time trial tomorrow.
Rob, one thing on tomorrow, the team time trial, as the sort of technical manager of the team, in terms of equipment, what are going to be the main considerations tomorrow on a time trial like that?
Well, for me, we probably put a really, really big gear on it to give it a chance to go fast.
How big?
Well, Tony always rides a 58.
Wow, okay.
And 58.11. And you come to a limit to follow if you're only on 54, for example. Because we felt that on a slightly down in the World Championships, and Tom Warner was really, really a good cyclist. He suffered on Tony's wheel because, you know, with the frequency, you come to a point to say, I have to keep the power and the frequency. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Well, we probably underestimated that before the race, how fast Tony would go on a slight downhill, keeping the pressure, keeping the power on with that big gear, because that's really then on the downward limits.
Yeah.
You can say you just cannot hold 460 watts with the frequency of 150 over time in a team time trial.
Mm-hmm.
That will not work. So I think that's something that we're thinking of, to say it's flat. We don't know how the wind is right now, but somehow if it comes from the coast, we will see a situation with tailwind.
Yeah.
And we just don't want to be under geared. And you can always go 12 and 13, but you cannot go 10 if you don't have it. So
yeah.
I think that's a point for us. Otherwise, we have our routine. I mean, we will do the course in the morning. They will have a look at it. We will try to find the best order, which is basically kind of like, you know, a guy who can really speed it up, a guy who can hopefully keep it, a guy who can speed it up if needed, a guy who can keep it, instead of the strongest guys behind each other. And then you always have a drop in speed and a pickup. So we want to have the speed as steady as possible.
Yeah.
And it still has to be decided, like, because the position in front of Tony, it's not an easy one. So we'll hopefully find the best solution.
And Cav is a real asset in team time trials, isn't he? I mean, he's got a fantastic record.
And he can guide it pretty well. I mean, he can. The team is motivated, but he can really, like, get the best out of the guys. Because it's really important, you know, to approach it as a team and not as 9 guys doing individual time trials, try to shine and be a hero. That will never succeed on a team time trial.
The Tour de France with humansinvent.com. Innovation, craftsmanship and design.
So that was Rolf Aldag. Julien, what are you thinking for the team time trial tomorrow? What's your prediction?
I agree with Daniel. I mean, given that, you know, Tony Martin was in the lead group today, they've also got Chavanel, who crushed the field, the weak field.
Just because he's French.
No, he's in great form. I mean, we've seen him already twice, you know, going along at the front in the last 2 days.
Kwiatkowski could be in yellow.
And Kwiatkowski too could be in yellow. So, yeah.
He's fourth overall at the moment. There's a clutch of riders just a second down. I mean,
well, no, that's the stage finish, Rich.
No, Clermont Général.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Julien Simon, second.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll see him in yellow tomorrow.
No,
I don't think we'll see him. No, there's a whole, there's, you know, 72 riders at 1 second down on GC. Miller's the one we've been talking about, but
Boston Hagen is another.
Boston Hagen's a decent prospect.
Well, I wouldn't expect them to be in the top three with Thomas injured.
Well, exactly. That's a huge loss to them, isn't it, to Team Sky?
I think it's going to be a short rotation, so I wouldn't count them out. Definitely not. I mean, Stannard looked better today.
Yeah, he did.
Pete kind of, I think he just Darius Bickley, you know, dropped out.
Yeah,
interesting. In the climbs today.
At one point, yeah,
and
we what?
And that's and I think Saxo did this exactly the same.
That's interesting.
They had four guys, you know, falling behind, you know, in the second part
Lopez
of the stage.
And Kirianka both got dropped, and we watched that and thought, what's going on there? That could, do you think that could have been because?
I think so. I mean, I didn't notice for Sky, but apart from Kenneth, I noticed the four Saxo Bank or Saxo Tinkoff riders dropping behind, and I wouldn't be surprised that, you know, Saxo would do pretty well to like top five maybe.
I mean, it's a difficult one to predict, isn't it? Because usually, you know, there are a series of teams that always go well in team time trials, but so many teams in this tour picked riders with really with a climbing bias, a mountain bias.
Yeah.
You look at the Garmin Sharp lineup, and they're not as strong on paper as they would usually be in a team time trial. And the same applies to Sky, the same applies to, I think, perhaps to a certain extent, BMC. I mean, if you were, we were at the team presentation the other day, Rich, and we were struck by what an imposing team physically the likes of Argos Shimano and Lotto Bellisol.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
If you consider the nature of the route.
Julia, you have to leave. You're going. You've
yeah,
had so enough.
Yes, I'm going to Bastion.
Okay. Right, well, thank you very much for joining
See
us
you
tonight.
Around.
Thanks,
Good
Julia.
Bye.
Au revoir.
Off he goes. No, I was saying, Rich, that, you know, the most imposing sort of teams physically are teams like Argos Shimano, and you take into account the route tomorrow, and it really is a bit of a drag run, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's 25 kilometers.
I don't see them being in contention.
I think
Garmin Sharp, if you look at their, they've got, you know, some very good experience, right? As they won the team time trial 2 years ago, some of the survivors from that team, Christian van der Velde, David Miller, obviously, Ryder Hesjedal is a real asset there. Jack Bauer as well, riders like that, strong. Rohan Dennis.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see their tactics tomorrow, because in the past, they're one of the teams that have often finished time trials with six riders. And, you know, they can afford to drop a couple of guys tomorrow. They've not got the same general classification ambitions that they might have had in the past, or I think they're hedging their bets slightly. They're not sure whether Hesjedal
their bets.
But yeah, they're not sure yet whether Martin and Hesjedal will be in contention on GC overall.
Orica Green Edge won today, and they've got a strong team for the team time trial as well, I think.
They have, and a good team for that kind of course, a very flat course.
Great, well listen, let's wrap it up there, because we've got to travel somehow to Nice. How are you getting to Nice?
I think I'm getting the plane tomorrow morning, but I'm not in charge of logistics.
I'll just go where someone tells me.
Yeah, no, I'm getting a plane.
Yeah. You are getting a plane. Yeah, I'm getting a plane as well. Well, I'll see you in Nice, Daniel.
All right,
and
see you, Rich.
We've got something to really look forward to, which is meeting up with Lionel.
And leaving the Mega Smeralda.
I'm leaving the boat, but meeting up with Lionel Burney, who will be joining us on the podcast from tomorrow. He's fresh from Glastonbury.
Yeah,
looking forward to his input. I think we're going to launch the competition tomorrow as well, finally, so please tune in.